Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Welcome back. It's The Advertising Show. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsythe. Being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com and by Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. It's Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. Here in just a moment, Gene Bliss, a regular contributor to the show out of New York, the customer experience. And today she's talking about your favorite plan, USAA, Brad. Are you a member of that yet, by the way?
USAA?
Yes.
Never heard of it.
It's an insurance place, but that's okay.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, okay. And basically, they're looking at companies who are doing a very, very good job. And actually, these are some of the things that are featured in her new book as well. So this is kind of a little bit of a taste, a preview of what she's got to for you. And also, a little bit later on this hour, Shamin Abbas, our activist for excellence. And that is the new rules of news releases or the new rules of press releases. So something good to listen to. In addition to Saul Berman, our special guest today. Saul is a PhD, is the global and America's leader for the IBM Strategy and Change Consulting Group within IBM Global Business Services, and that is GBS. In this role, he works closely with major corporations around the world on strategic business issues. He leads a worldwide team of IBM consultants focused on delivering business value through business technology and operations strategy engagements, as well as organizational change initiatives. And it's a two-page bio here, Brad, and with a lot of bullet points, too. So we're going to talk to Saul here in just a few minutes.
But I heard his publicist, Linda, helped him with that two-pager. Got it down to two pages, actually.
Well, that's the way it is, you know, with those kind of guys, but that's okay. But we'll have Saul on in just a moment. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to mention that we're both using the IBM Selectric typewriter today out of respect to today's guest, Saul Berman. And so if you hear a little tapping going on in the background, that's what it is.
I still have one of those things, Brad, too. It's in an office upstairs, and I don't think I can find it if my life depended on it.
Well, hold on to it. It may be worth some money one day.
Absolutely.
You know, these network morning shows are very competitive. I'm sure that you've heard by now about the Minnesota couple whose wedding dance became an internet sensation on YouTube.
But of course they screwed up. Yep, that's right.
A few weeks ago, ABC decided to cancel their airfare and hotel rooms because of their appearance on NBC's Today show. NBC said that they're going to make up for their competitors' bad manners and pay for their travel and hotel. Obviously, ABC thought, Good Morning America thought that they had an exclusive or a first, I guess, first show with the couple, and they got scooped. So, you know, the competitive wars, guess wars of the breakfast programming coming out of New York with networks. Mm-hmm. You know, it just goes to show you, book your own hotel.
and NBC up for the rest of the hotel and sent them home and the airfare on the way home. Exactly.
Yeah.
What a great way to start off.
I think they hitched a ride with the pilot that had flown Ford executives in to D.C. earlier in the year.
Or better yet, all I want is Scully to be my pilot. That's all. Or Sully or whatever his name is. Scully, that wouldn't be good, would it? This is interesting, too. Graduation time here, a little while back here. And now it comes with your commercial message attached to that. A couple of months ago, 18-year-old Kenya Maya closed her address at Los Angeles' Alexander Hamilton High School on a startling note, publicly professing a secret passion for a classmate. It says, "I cannot let this opportunity just pass by," said Ms. Maya, who is to enroll at the Mass Institute of Technology. "I love you, Jake Miner." The crowd roared. Mr. Miner stood up and bumped his fist in the air. A few days later, Miss Maya cashed a check for $1,800. In the commotion Miss Maya created was actually part of a ploy cooked up by a marketing executive for a few of them and consultants for 20th Century Fox, a Hollywood studio, whose headquarters is less than 2 miles from Hamilton High. The goal of the pilot, or the plot, which included a marketing company called the Intelligence Group and at least one other contractor, was to create a viral buzz online for the romantic comedy I Love You, Beth Cooper. So her address to the classmates included a commercial break.
And it's working because we have a worldwide audience, and you just spoke about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't see a check yet, but I'll be hanging on those words here. We've got Saul Berman out of New York joining us in just a moment on the advertising show. In the meantime, Gene Bliss, USAA. Let's find out what this is all about.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
USAA is a San Antonio company offering auto and home insurance to a customer base of military members and their families. While new hires are not required to be from the military, they must understand military life. So new USAA employees wear the military helmet and feel the weight of the backpack and flak vest as it is strapped to their backs. And they eat the same meals, the MREs, or meals ready to eat, that soldiers eat in the field. New recruits are brought to attention by military personnel and are deployed to orientation by a replica of a military deployment letter. They get to know the people behind the uniform by reading letters from soldiers and their families. What is your version of receiving orders and wearing a flak jacket so you can recreate your customers' lives during employee orientation? Beloved companies have their new hires, no matter what job they're hired for, work in retail or in their warehouses or wherever their customers are, so they can understand customers and get to know their lives. Do you?
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
It's the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Thanks, Gene Bliss. Always great stuff. And remember, she's got a book coming out here shortly as well. What do you have there, Brad?
You know, Alaska's now former governor is coy about her future political plans, but sources say...
As if we didn't know. Come on now.
Yeah. Sources say that she may be testing the waters to see how much interest radio syndicators have in her. It isn't unusual, of course, for a defeated national candidate to turn to radio. See Governor Mike Huckabee, for example, short-form commentators that air on 400 stations via Citadel Media. Coming to radio would be an ironic twist for our former governor, Sarah Palin. I say ours, Alaska's. Whose position on the media? Well, we know that's what it was. Remember recently her saying, quit making things up?
Yeah.
I guess she'll have her chance to make things up.
To make things up?
She gets her gig.
Jeez.
Anyway,
well,
she's pretty. Though.
Well, then she should be on television then, okay?
Well, a greater reach on radio, though, these days. You know that.
Well, okay, that's fine. Maybe on the web or something like that too, as well. But that'll be interesting to see what course her political future takes here over the next few years as well. I have a feeling it's pointed toward the White House. I don't know about that. Saul Berman is our special guest. Saul, as we said before, is a partner and global executive at IBM Global Business Services, talking about, amongst other things, beyond advertising. And a report here talking about choosing a strategic path to the digital consumer. We'll find out more about what that's all about and join Saul in conversation here in just a minute on The Advertising Show.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
Longer than dirt.
It's Ray Schillings and Brad Forsythe on the Advertising Show. So happy to be talking this weekend with Saul Berman. Saul is the partner and global executive at IBM Global Business Services. Out of New York this weekend, Saul, it's great to have you here. Thanks for being on the Advertising Show.
Happy to join you.
Yeah, Saul, the title of your research that I hold in my hand here is called Beyond Advertising, Choosing a Strategic Path to the Digital Customer. First off, Saul, what is the driving need to move beyond advertising?
Well, we did a paper last year called The End of Advertising as We Know It. So part of what we identified were some of the trends that we now see the results of in the marketplace in terms of changes in how the advertising world was going to work. And now what we're trying to do with our clients is try to help them understand where they go to take on these different threats that we brought to their attention last year that are facing them in the marketplace. Things like the increasing demand and realization of consumer control, things like the increasing sources for creative content, things like the more open marketplace for the placement of advertising, things like multiple platforms that you're very much aware of where advertising is being placed today. We brought all these trends to their attention, and we said the business is going to be very different than it has been in the past. So this year we went out and interviewed over 100 professionals within the industry related to advertising and surveyed over 7,000 consumers in six countries around the world. And what we basically tried to do is bring together the convergence, as we see it, of marketing and advertising in the digital age and the implications of that for our clients and others who are advertisers in the agency model, content owners, and media distributors. And what we're trying to do, as we suggest in the title here, is that a new form of advertising and marketing must be engaged in. Old ways cannot meet the challenge of today. The distinction is blurring between advertising and marketing. Digital communication enables us to marry the return on investment characteristics of direct marketing with many of the emotional characteristics of traditional brand advertising. We refer to this as consumer centricity, and within consumer centricity, we talk about the need for granularity, which we can explore further, and we talk about the need for integration. So in terms of granularity, we need to have the ability increasingly to target down to the individual level. So we have abilities that we didn't have previously, and we need to take advantage of these in terms of providing measurable results, two-way communication. And in terms of integration, we have to make increasingly the advertising contextual to the content, both in terms of its time and place and medium, and both in terms of its placement within the content. And we see this as being a two-way program in terms of engaging active participation with the receiver of the advertising at will. When these two components combine, the granularity and the integration, then we get the consumer centricity that enables the best of direct marketing and brand advertising in a combined mode. We think thereby it becomes integrated contextually and relevant. It bridges advertising and marketing formats, and it enables flexibility in how we micro-target as we move into this more segmented world of the future.
So, Saul, from your research, you determined four primary trends that are blurring the boundaries between traditional brand advertising and direct marketing today. You mentioned consumer adoption of new distribution formats. I think we all understand what those are. But let's talk about a couple of interesting points here regarding those four primary trends. A shift in advertising spending, I'd like to hear you chat a little bit about that. And then I'd also like to follow up about the digital migration of platforms.
Terrific. Well, certainly we've started to see some of the shift in advertising spending during the current economic downturn. Some of the more recent forecasts that are out, combining some of the early data this year as well as some of the forecasts for the rest of the year, I'll cite one from Zenith Media, says that they're predicting advertising spend in North America will be down 10% this year, Yet at the same time, internet advertising spend will grow 10% this year. Mm-hmm. So to some extent, we're starting to see an acceleration in some of these patterns in the current economic downturn in terms of the opportunity to shift from traditional forms of one-way, interruptive, push advertising to new forms of follow me at the right place at the right time, interactive messaging. So traditional platforms were used for either transactional marketing, examples, phone, direct mail, point of sale, or advertising. But the new forms of social media, online media, gaming, branded entertainment, advanced TV, can be used to address both sets of requirement, whether they be transactional or they be brand building. And so we see the digital migration is leading to a major opportunity to do this in ways that weren't possible in traditional one-way static media.
Well, you combined both answers there and saved me having to follow up. Let's touch on the fourth of your four primary trends, being the emergence of new capabilities.
Okay. Well, you know, the part of the threat that traditional providers in the space always have to deal with is, like in other industries, if they don't get ahead of the curve of change, then sometimes other people will bring the new models to market. And, you know, we saw this very clearly in the music space. We're seeing it to some extent in the publishing space. So we're telling our clients that not only do they have to protect their core businesses as much as possible, but they also need to be leaders in creating new capabilities for these game-changing opportunities that are out there. And this is, we divide the world into a series of consumer segments we call the massive passives, the gadgeteers, and the cool kids. The massive passives, you know, when you've seen one when you go in their house, and the VCR, if they still have one, or VHS or DVD player is flashing 12 o'clock. You know, they're the technology Luddites. They're the ones that adopt the new technology when the cable or satellite company or Apple or somebody makes it simple and easy for them to use and, you know, dumbs down the requirements of adopting that technology. I use the example of DVRs in the sense that DVRs have really had a major impact on how people watch television. People who adopted these things when TiVo or Replay first came out, almost 9 years ago now, said it totally changed their lives. The only problem was only 5% of the public went out and bought that kind of product over a multi-year period. Why? Because they didn't know how to bring it home, right, plug it into their set-top box, plug it into their television set, plug it into their antenna, whatever they had, or their cable, and then, you know, when it didn't work, who were they going to call? Mm-hmm. Now, my problem, unfortunately, was because I worked for IBM, they tended to call their favorite geek, and they thought if you worked for IBM, you were somebody they should call. Not so in my case, but in any case, those are the massive passives. The gadgeteers are the ones that usually have a Newton in their closet if they've been around long enough, meaning they've got to buy the latest and greatest technology. They'll buy the iPhone at $600 before the price comes down and before it really works. But they got to have the latest and greatest. The cool kids are the ones with lots of bandwidth, lots of time, and not a lot of money, and they're out there experimenting with a lot of this. So the point here is these new entrants are out there appealing to the gadgeteers and the cool kids, and while my traditional clients get most of their business and make most of their money off the massive passives, if they're not in the game with these new markets at the same time, they're going to be left in the dust as the business models and patterns change here. So examples include the rise of software to automate buying and selling processes through the likes of Google and Yahoo, the potential consortium of cable companies such as the development of Canoe enabling advanced advertising for cable television, or automated technology providers like Visible World that enable us to create different versions of what we're providing to the end consumer. These are things that our traditional players can be doing, should be doing, in some cases are participating in, but, you know, we're going to see the new entrants such as Apple and the music industry if they're not out ahead of the game trying to create their own model.
On the Advertising Show, Saul Berman is our special guest, partner and global executive at IBM Global Business Services. Out of New York this weekend, we'll continue our conversation with Saul, along with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth here in just a moment.
Why do more media professionals read iWantMedia.com? iWantMedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities.
iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
You worked too hard, you ate too much, the cheesecake made you greedy. Let your aching head and stomach hear this message from Old Speedy.
On The Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, Saul Berman, a special guest out of New York. Partner and global executive, IBM Global Business Services. One of the quotes you have here, it says, from a CEO of a major agency holding company, I think what you're seeing right now is clients demanding to see where their dollars are being spent. Media buying is basically efficiencies and costs. If you can prove that you can buy more efficiently than somebody else, that's how you're going to win the business. Is that any news, Saul, or is that just something that's always been around?
Well, I mean, the idea has always been around. I think the difference is now we have the ability in some cases to measure it. Now,
okay.
There's all kinds of debates about measures that we can talk about as well, but we have the ability to deliver to an addressable audience, to measure that audience, and to make it interactive. So we talked a number of years ago in one of the other papers I did about a concept we called vying for attention, long before people started talking about the attention economy. And in that, we said there's only 7 days in the week still and only 24 hours in the day. All the technology in the world is not going to change that. And we have all this content that's increasingly going to be available to us in many different places, wherever we are, whenever we are. So part of the problem is to get your message through the clutter. Part of the problem is to get your message heard. And we're suggesting that we now have the tools, conceptually, as I say, details to be worked out, to get a granular measure. So, you know, advertising's always been a black hole in terms of the results we see.
Mm-hmm.
We've been able to identify the number of eyeballs that, in theory, were listening or watching at the time that content was on. Now we have the ability to start to figure out if they engaged with it, how long they spent with it, did they take some action based on it. This can give us a lot more direct return on investment measure. At the same time, we have the ability to integrate the messaging for them wherever they are, to have it continuous, have it related, have it contextual. So a lot of the people in the study we did recently, we went and asked the consumers, would you be willing to trade information for value? And surprisingly, if consumers get value for providing information about themselves that makes it possible for you to be more granular with your advertising, only over 50% of them said they would give you that information for value. And over 40% of them said they wanted portability, they wanted integrated or smart messaging. They didn't want to be bombarded with what I will call push advertising over and over again. So to answer your question, I think the opportunity is there to measure the returns and get more direct results than we ever could before.
Very good.
Saul, you talk about getting something to, in turn for giving up what is in effect privacy issues, I suppose. For decades, at least a solid decade, Americans have been giving up a bit of privacy at their local supermarket in exchange for discounts on product goods, yet there seems to be a bit of a greater sensitivity to do this online. Why is that, do you think?
Well, I think because there continues to be some, let's say, less comfort with the portability of the information once it's provided online. Meaning, you know, while your traditional supermarket or whomever was perhaps selling your name and your list to other people for other forms of advertising, which came in direct mail traditionally, in the internet space or the electronic space, digital space, that may happen much more quickly and to many more people, and we've all been bombarded with spam early on in this transition. So I think people have some sensitivity because they're not so sure where it's going to, they're not so sure who's using it, they're not so sure how they're using it. Yet, as in the traditional space, if we give them the choice and we provide them something of value in return, they indicate a willingness. And there are business models out there now. Let's take one like e-miles, where you go online and basically you tell them your interests and you agree to look at some of the messaging they send you, and in return they give you airline miles. And they give you more miles to look at things that maybe are a little harder to get you to look at. So there are models where people are starting to take advantage of that free 411, where, you know, you can get, you can continue to pay for access to phone numbers, or you can, you know, listen to an ad along the way and get that information for free. Consumers will have a choice, but a certain sizable, we think, majority of the consumers will turn in, or we will provide information that allows you to be more granular and more targeted if they really believe it's their choice and they're getting something of value in return, as opposed to they feel like somebody's doing something to them.
On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Our special guest out of New York is Saul Berman, who is partner and global executive at IBM Global Business Services. We're talking about beyond advertising, choosing a strategic path to the digital consumer. And we'll talk more about that with Saul in just a moment.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kinds of kids eat Armor hot dogs?
The study is called Beyond Advertising, Choosing a Strategic Path to the Digital Consumer. It's eye-opening. It's very good. And our special guest is Saul Berman out of New York, partner and global executive at IBM Global Business Services. Saul, interesting so far. Thanks for being a part of the Advertising Show.
Happy to be here.
Something a little more topical here, Saul. Forrester Research recently found only a small increase in the number of people using the Internet after years of steady growth. According to its survey, the number of households with Internet access grew 3% year to year. Even broadband expansion has slowed to 6%. Both figures in previous years top 10%, according to Forrester's consumer poll. I'm curious, what does this portray? I don't know, the shift in digital marketing, the new platforms you've been talking about, et cetera?
Well, we're getting to pretty high, I don't know exactly which numbers you have in front of you, but we're getting to pretty high participation levels in the Internet world. Now, some of those people participate in their office rather than at home, so, you know, you've got to be a little careful what data you're looking at and how you interpret it. But in our online study, which by definition, you know, says the person is online, we found, you know, from the different groups, even the massive passives, that over two-thirds of them have watched, for example, videos online. And of our more engaged groups, the cool kids and the gadgeteers, those numbers are up in the 84 to 89% range. So we think that, you know, there's certainly active participation in that. Not everybody participates at the same level. We talk about it, you know, from being an experiencer at a passive level to being engaged. People who regularly do this kind of video participation in the online community, and those numbers range more from 25 to 40% of those who have access to the online world, to influencers, those who engage with those videos, rate them, rank them, comment on them, provide feedback on retailers. Those numbers are up for the active groups in the 30-35% range, and then we have the authors, those who actually upload videos and participate in a more active way by contributing content to it. That group represents about 25% of the gadgeteers and the cool kids. So, I mean, one of the things we try to tell our clients today that's very important is you cannot treat the consumers as one segment. And we are not in a world where we're moving, as I say, from black and white TV to color TV. We're not moving from one model fits all to another model that fits all. We're increasingly in a segmented world with different groups behaving in different ways. Now, this gets even more challenging when we talk about the granularity, the targeting, the return on investment, because we have the question not only of privacy that we talked about a little bit before and information that you can tie to behavioral targeting. The other piece of it is when the family comes into the house and watches the interactive television set, how do we know which member of the household is watching that programming or is watching that advertising that we're tailoring for them? Increasingly, you know, we're going to have to identify that individual as well by some kind of sign-on or separate button on the remote control. But wherever we go, we're going to increasingly be trying to match the person, and it doesn't have to be invasive. It can be matching them to a demographic profile that we target advertising around that broad profile by knowing whether it's the mother, father, daughter, or son that's, you know, engaging in the activity at that point in time.
So before I let you go, I've got one final question, but before we let you go, if someone's interested in learning more or reading the study, how can they do this?
Easy. Just go to IBM.com, which is our external website. All the reports we do are out there, and they can search for the end of advertising or beyond advertising or any of the papers I've read or mentioned today, from vying for attention to the open media company of the future to even the end of television, which is one we did about 4 years ago, one of our best read reports, or the CEO studies that we do with now over 1,000 CEOs in person each year, or some of our new work on the new economic environment and the challenges that face most businesses today.
Saul, it's been very informative and very entertaining as well. We appreciate you being a part of the advertising show.
It's been a pleasure. I look forward to doing it again.
And we invite you once again to go to that's IBM.com and look for Beyond Advertising, Choosing a Strategic Path to the Digital Consumer, or a whole bunch of other great reports in there as well. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on the Advertising Show, back with more in just a moment.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Another public service announcement from Brill Cream. Men, beware. Use one dab of Brill Cream. Just a little dab makes your hair look excitingly clean.
Very special guest today on the show, Saul Berman. Very good, and enjoyed chatting with Saul. We've got coming up next week, it's Kate Newlin, author of Passion Brands, here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Always a great show, and always hope you get a chance to sell, you know, to join us here and tell a friend or so about what's going on here at theadvertisingshow.com. A lot of good stuff, too, as well. What do you have there, Brad?
Well, you know, Ray, participation in frequent flyer programs is beginning to become a much less frequent thing that people are doing. Membership in hotel, airlines, and car rental loyalty programs declined 31% since 2007, per a study from the loyalty research company Colloquy. What was interesting about this, Ray, is the results which are based on 2,100 U.S. consumers, indicate that consumers are still interested in loyalty programs. They just are not doing it so often when it comes to, you know, carriers and hotels and where to invest their time and money. So
does it say why, though? I mean, why would that change?
Basically, I believe that when it comes to loyalty programs overall, they're up some 15 to 20% depending on the category. It just happens to be on the travel side of the sector. Consumers have been pared down in terms of their memberships to, according to this story, an average of 1.5 programs. And I think that has to do with the fact that, you know, people aren't jumping around from brand to brand or from carrier to carrier or mm-hmm. hotel to hotel to try to get the best deal. They're now hooked in to a particular brand that they like. You know, for flying, for example, I fly Continental a lot. I know you do too.
Yeah.
And you're just not willing to jump around to different airlines just to get a good deal. You stay with the brand. So I guess the loyalty programs have worked so well, mm-hmm. at least in the travel category, that they're staying now with what they like.
with one exception being maybe United Airlines, that is having a dramatic problem with their brand. It's just not good anymore. It's been tarnished, and it's been supported by management and staff that forgot what it was all about to begin with. I don't fly United Airlines. I suppose if I lived in another part of the country or something, but who knows? Interesting, though. So we stay with our favorite brand, no doubt about it. We've got Shamin Abbas with us here. The Activist for Excellence is what that's all about. And this is new rules of press releases, or new rules of news releases is what she's talking about.
And now it's time for Activist for Excellence. PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
The media no longer stands between your press release and the consumer world. The web has changed all the rules, and now the masses read your releases directly. We found that out when promoting an innovative cosmetic product. The beauty bloggers, as well as the mainstream print media, drove people to find our press releases online. You therefore need to be speaking their language and writing, knowing that you're reaching buyers directly. The media is still part of overall communication strategies and in many places still utterly vital. But remember that your audience is no longer a handful of just editors. It's the millions of people surfing the internet. Therefore, don't just send news releases when big news is happening. Find new and good reasons to send them more frequently. Create news releases that appeal directly to the end consumer, not just to the journalist that you're targeting. Write your releases with great attention to keyword-rich copy. Include offers that compel the consumer to respond to your release in some way. Place links in the releases to point potential consumers to your website or special landing pages relevant to the release. And optimize news release delivery for searching and browsing. You can add social media tags for Technorati, Dig, and Delicious so that your release is found easily. Drive people into the sales process with press releases. These are fundamental changes in the use of press releases that can drive buyers straight to your company or your client's products and services at a time when they're ready to buy.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence. PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
Thanks, Shamin, on the Advertising Show. Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth. Don't forget, next week, it's Kate Newlin, author of Passion Brands, here with Ray Schillen's and Brad Forsyth. We've got the Advertising Show all over the world, but at the Vatican, it's Vatican Radio. Can't you just hear their jingles now? Reporting from Vatican City, God will be right back. After this commercial message, Vatican Radio, the official voice of the Roman Catholic Church, has begun airing advertisements for the first time in its nearly 80-year history, injecting a bit of the profane into its otherwise unwavering lineup of sacred programming. more programming, less interruption. Now they have commercials. Now, in addition to tracking every move that Pope Benedict makes and every word he utters, listeners will be treated to 45-second ads. Why 45? Made in five languages, extolling Italy's largest power company, Enel, and the virtues of clean energy. They were going to get Billy Mays, but they got Pope Benedict instead. Can you hear? Pope Benedict here for Enel.
Seriously, Ray, I'm wondering, does he have like a favorite restaurant in Rome and he does endorsements for him? You know, get your ravioli over here at, you know, Frank Main Street.
The pizza pasta place. Mention the Pope sent you and you get a 10% off your ticket or something like that. That's kind of funny when you think about it, though. So it's basically they're changing it. Let's see. Commercials are genuflect to economic reality at a time of global downturn. Well, that's true. Despite its driving mission, the Vatican has not been insulated. Well, obviously that's true from temporal turbulence, running an ungodly deficit of $22 million last year, which is almost as much as Clear Channel. So consequently, we'll run some more ads. You know, why not? I think it's a great idea. And maybe, I think that's hysterical, though. First of all, if there's Vatican Radio, I think that's pretty cool. But the fact that you're now going to hear commercials on the channel is absolutely hysterical. So anyway, there it goes. What else do you have here? We've got less than a minute here.
Less than a minute. Well, you know, I'd like to mention, Ray, hold on here. This was very important. Believe it or not, this blew my mind. Where is it? Stay with me. It's right here.
I'm not going anywhere.
Twitter has decided that they're going to play it up with their new homepage, allowing for search. You probably know that because you're on Twitter. It's unveiling a brand new homepage in an effort to create a better first impression. You can now, through the microblogging site, look at it, check it out, you know where to go, and you'll see real-time search engine capability, the main feature with a big search box on the homepage there suggesting, see what people are saying about blank, and then it takes a topic and gets you going on it. So, yeah, it's a great idea. I think
that's
they're smart to do that.
I love all this new stuff. It's kind of fun. Otherwise, it'd be really boring. The Advertising Show, brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine and by Captivate Network. You can visit them at Captivate.com. Of course, visit Ad Age by AdAge.com. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, hope you enjoyed the show today. Well, of course we got another one next week. It'll be great, too. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.